So I guess really what we want to ask the question is, what are political parties? What are they? How do they interrelate with government? A whole bunch of questions that I hope to be able to answer today for you. What is it? It's a group of people, however loosely organized, that differ from an interest group in one very important way. Any idea what that is? They've qualified to put candidates on the ballot to get elected to public office. Now, sometimes it's hard to tell the difference, really, between a political party and an interest group. Tea Party is a good example of that. They meet the qualification of a political party in all but one way. They have not qualified to put candidates on the ballot. Instead, they work within almost entirely the Republican Party to put candidates on the ballot under the Republican label. If you've been following what's going on in Washington right now, it's very interesting. Of course, the Chinese peasants used to say, "May you live in interesting times," because the only thing that was of interest to Chinese historians were wars, famines, plagues, things that made life intolerable for the Chinese peasant. Now, just to put this a little of this in perspective, I don't think any of you probably have a history, studied the history of the United States House of Representatives. Would that be a fair guess? I had a mini course in that from Norm Ornstein, and you will notice in the newspapers you will find Ornstein quoted frequently as it has to do with Congress, because he's the foremost historian and book writer on the United States Congress currently. And I was very fortunate many, many years ago, when he was still very young, cutting his spurs, to do a six-week mini course at the University of Texas on the United States Congress from Norm Ornstein. He's a heck of an interesting teacher and a great scholar. But there was a column in the paper the other day that said, what's going on right now is pretty much unprecedented with the United States House of Representatives. What am I talking about? Have we had a speaker resign from the office mid-term that wasn't under indictment or something? No. And at the same time quit Congress? No. Have we ever had an inter-party struggle such as is going on within the Republican Party for the speakership in either the 20th century or the 21st century? No. It's going to be interesting. Now, when we turn our attention to the Texas situation, this is a good boilerplate definition. So how do you go about qualifying? We'll play with that issue. What are the functions of a political party? Well, this is the laundry list that you'll get when you look at most textbooks. Fair enough? This is the textbook laundry list. Intermediaries between the electorate and the government. Well, I guess we could give that a check. Recruitment of candidates. Sometimes, sometimes not. Who recruits whom? Now, Miss Sargent, I'm going to pick on you for a second. Because I think you're more politically knowledgeable than some of these other folks. Now, that's not a put-down, folks. Okay. Did the Republican Party recruit Donald Trump? Or did Donald Trump recruit the Republican Party?
Probably the second.
So we're getting into a situation now, and we'll look at some of the reasons for it, when the candidates recruit the party. That is to say, they go out of their way, they use mechanisms to, in effect, capture the nomination of the party. And it may well be, in fact, what we're seeing at the national level, and we don't see so much of that in Texas, but we did see it in the 2014 election, quite honestly, where for the most part the party leadership of the Republican Party in Texas were supporting David Dewhurst for the lieutenant governorship. And then in the Republican primary, Cruz managed to overcome the leadership of the Republican Party, most of the establishment leadership of the Republican Party, and get the nomination. And they had to make the decision, would they support him in November or not? going to be interesting when we get around to 2018 for that same election. In 2020. Contest elections and mobilize voters. And increasingly, it's the candidates who are attempting to mobilize the voters rather than the party. There are several really good books out there, articles out there on the decline of political parties as machines are being able to recruit voters and get them to the polls. Organize and manage government. I don't know if you were paying any attention at all the other day when one of the leading tacticians of the Republican Party said, if we don't get our act together and start showing that we can actually do something in Congress, the voter is going to have a real problem saying, can these people be trusted to run government? And that ain't a Democrat saying that. That's one of the Republican leadership. Ultimately, parties are accountable to the voters for what they're able to accomplish. And how do they declare that we don't trust you? They vote against your candidates. And last but not least, generally parties tend to resolve conflicts between various interests. We looked at interest groups, right? And parties can serve as intermediaries between competing groups saying, look, you want this thing and you want this thing, neither one of you are going to get it, but let's see what we can do. When the parties themselves are causing the conflict, not just with other parties, but within themselves, it begins to be pretty dysfunctional. And last but not least, they set the agenda. Now, I use this in my federal government class, but I'm going to use it here real quick. That's not what I wanted. All right, let me just, it's not going to work the way I want it to work. I'm not going to worry about that. Let me ask you a question. Did any of you see the Gallup poll yesterday that was published several days ago on survey attitudes on Planned Parenthood? Okay, it's very interesting. Overall, 69% of the voters polled, and they picked Democratic and Republican voters both, and then they subsample the two. You can go to Gallup.com if you want to look at this poll. 69% of the American people in general do not want to defund Planned Parenthood. And even a majority of Republicans don't want to defund it. So is that necessarily the issue that the Republicans in Congress should stake this next election on? Would you shut the government down over that particular issue? Now, it is of extreme importance to the handful of people who want to see Planned Parenthood go away.
Yeah.
But it's not of importance to a majority of the people who are going to be voting in the November election.
Yeah.
So if you're a strategist for the Republican Party, and anybody was listening to you, what would you tell them? You don't want to follow Ted Cruz to shut the government down over a subject that 69% of the people object to? Look up the poll. I'm not making this stuff up. Okay. Conflict between the parties. What's kind of fascinating is if you have followed the history of approval for the Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare, though really and truly it ought to be called Romneycare because that's where the idea initiated, it's steadily moved up where there was only about 30% in support to where now there is a plurality that support it as opposed to opposed to it. Opinion changing. So when you're looking at which issues that you're going to pick, how important is polling? Well, that depends on one key factor. Who do you get to the polls in November? Now, what are the basis of party conflicts? Ideology, system of beliefs. We talked about ideology, didn't we? We hit it briefly. If you took federal government, you're familiar with it. We normally talk about conservative and liberal. Is that the complete picture? Within conservatism, there are several different kinds of conservatism. There's economic conservatism, philosophical conservatism, religious conservatism, or fundamentalism. And what you're seeing right now, okay, Ms. Blackwell, I don't know if you want to pass on it, just go ahead.
Okay.
Is there a liberal and conservative wing of the Republican Party in Congress?
Probably. No.
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 There's the moderate economic conservative and the Tea Party conservative. But that's basically what happened. You know, where have all the liberals gone? They ain't in the Republican Party anymore. At one time, you had Nelson Rockefeller. You had people who could really be considered liberal Republicans. They're not there anymore. If this were a federal government, course, we could talk about the history of the two parties over the last 50 years. We don't have time for that. It's not worth it. Within liberalism, there's also several different categories. There are economic progressive, there are social progressive, social liberal. Is it possible for a candidate to be an economic conservative and a social liberal? Sure. In fact, what's interesting is that within both parties, Democratic and Republican Party, there are people who fit the category of socially conservative but economically more liberal. For example, Trump is being attacked by some of the conservative wing of the Republican Party for what reason? Some of the tax proposals he's put forth really and truly are essentially progressive in nature. He said, yeah, I believe in a progressive income tax. I believe in taxing the Wall Street types a whole lot more than they are. And that's gotten some of the strong conservatives in the Republican Party going, ah, ah. In fact, the Kochs took out an ad accusing him of being a liberal in disguise, which was kind of interesting. So you got to be careful on these labels. They don't always necessarily fit. It's kind of a little bit like, now you might ask me how I know anything about this, but understand I'm married. What about sizes on women's dresses? Can you believe them?
No.
Jessica, can you believe?
No.
You know, somebody asked me, what size is your wife, you know, in terms of dresses? I said, well, it depends on what store you go to and which labels you look at. She can wear anything from a 6 to a 10.
Plus, it all depends on the dress.
Do what?
The dress style. It all depends on the dress.
Well,
style.
Even in the same style dress, has to try it on. You can't go buy it.
Mm-mm.
Men's clothing, almost always, you buy it, go in and buy a dress shirt. Somebody asked me what size my dress shirt is. It's 16.5/33. I can buy a 16.5/33 off the shelf and not even have to unwrap it. I know it'll fit. Men's pants, waist size, and length of the inseam are the two measures you look at. They'll fit. But like I say, my wife can wear anything from a 6 to a 10, depending on which one you get. So it's a matter you got to always try it on. So what does that have to do with what we're talking about? You got to be careful with these labels. They may or may not be very reflective. In addition to ideology, we're looking at interest. Economic and personal interest tend to be the two biggies. Within the Republican and Democratic parties, both, Personal issues and economic issues both play a significant role in determining how the members are going to think and to some extent how they're going to vote. Fair enough? There are pro-choice Republicans just like there are pro-life Republicans. They're probably more pro-life than pro-choice, but there's both. In the Democratic Party, you will find pro-choice, probably the majority, but pro-life Democrats as well. It's a personal issue that takes priority over other issues in many instances. Now let's do a little history, party history in Texas. From 1876, the end of Reconstruction, down to the early 1950s, Texas was a one-party state. It was a one-party Democratic state. But if you've had Texas history, you realize that that is really not completely accurate. Why? Well, because the Democratic Party really just served as a vehicle for various factions to fight it out, gain the nomination, and then get elected. Situation you're finding fairly close to what's happening within the Republican Party right now. Then you have a modified one-party status, which lasted from about, and these dates are approximate, 1952 to 1978. And then with the election of Bill Clements as governor in 1978, you begin the rise or ascendancy of the Republican Party. But I'm going to tell you that that does not tell you the whole picture. I worked in the Texas legislature as an administrative aide, 63, 65, 67. It was a very conservative body. There were a few people who were economically liberal or socially liberal, but for the most part, it was a very conservative body. Where did all the conservative Democrats go to? Well, beginning with the passage of the civil rights legislation in the 1960s, they increasingly, particularly the Southern Democrats, Southern conservative Democrats, became Republicans. Now, that wasn't an accident. Are you familiar with the Southern Strategy? You've heard of the Southern Strategy? Nixon's advisors told him that one way, and Kevin Phillips wrote a book called The Coming Republican Majority, in which he talks about the strategy of bringing Southern conservative Democrats who were unhappy about the civil rights legislation into the Republican Party. And they were wildly successful in accomplishing that. But the following is personal opinion, and I presented it as such. Be careful. My grandmother used to say, be careful what you wish for, you may get it. What is almost all of the leadership of the Republican Party at the national level now? Almost, not completely. Southern. You go back and look at the majority of the senators in the Republican Party, they're from the South and upper Midwest. Where did all the New York, Illinois, Ohio, used to be mainstays of the Republican Party, members go? They bailed. Now, that's one reason why many of the Midwestern states are very muchly open for grabs at the present time. It's going to be interesting. All right, we're in a two-party era now? I doubt it. I think we've gone back to a modified one-party era. Republicans control every statewide office in Texas and a majority of both the House and the Senate. Now the question is, how long will that last? Are there any demographic, social, and economic changes in Texas which are likely to challenge that? Well, let me ask you a question. What are the major cities in Texas?
Austin, Houston, San Antonio.
The legislators from Dallas are majority what? Republican or Democrat? They're Democrat. San Antonio. Houston. The only major metro, El Paso, the only major metropolitan area in Texas where a majority of the members are Republican is from Fort Worth, Tarrant County. The demographic changes that have hit Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, Travis, El Paso have not quite yet hit Tarrant County. But it's happening. So, oh, by the way, I'm going to post for you a, I told you I went to an extremely good presentation. Caroline, you remember I told you Monday I went to an extremely interesting presentation Saturday by Steve Murdoch, who is the chief demographer of the state of Texas that now is in the Hobby Center. I've got his slides from that presentation. Now, I will warn you, you can overdose real fast on the statistics, on the charts. But when you start looking at them, they replicate what we covered in class about the, and it even makes it more clear about what's happening to Texas. Texas will be majority Hispanic by 2030. There's no question. End of sentence. In fact, by 2050, would you like to guess what the percentage of non-Hispanic Caucasians is likely to be in Texas? If present trends continue? 18%. Now, does that look like it's going to have any impact on the politics of Texas? Is a pig's rear pork? All right, major political parties. I said we'd get around to this. What is a major political party? By definition, by legal definition, if your candidate for governor got 20% of the vote or more, you are a majority political party. If your political party got less than 20%, but more than, actually just 2%, you're a minor party. Why that's important is both automatically qualify to put candidates in the ballot for the partisan election. Remind me, what is the only partisan election we hold in Texas? No fair, Mr. Whitehill. You're not supposed to ask questions. You're just supposed to lay this stuff out and we'll memorize it for the test and forget it. True? Jessica, what's the only partisan election in Texas where candidates are identified by political party label?
First Tuesday.
November of the even numbered year. Okay. First Tuesday after the first Monday in November of the even numbered year, right? Now, the reason she knows that is she's worked as an election clerk. She's well aware of that. We have four political parties in Texas that have met the legal qualification to put candidates on the ballot in the November general election. Now, whether the Green Party is going to be able to be on the ballot again, and actually we have some provisions in there for general elections in presidential years and general elections in non-presidential years, and I'm giving you the non-presidential year stuff. There's a special subset of qualifications for president, only for qualifying for presidential election, okay? So the four that would be on the ballot in November 2016 will be the Democrat, Republican, the Greens, and the Libertarians. Now, can a party that has not put candidates on the ballot qualify to be on the ballot? Yeah, they can. They do it through a petition process where they have to get a number of signatures. And then there's also the process of being an independent candidate, and I'll talk about that with you in just a minute, okay? All right, you're legal. You got time for a piece of humor? My wife and I went to a wedding a while back of a couple that had been living together for about 10 years. And they were, you know, anybody that didn't know them would not have known that they weren't legally married. I guess they probably could have qualified to be legally married under the common law statutes of Texas if they'd held themselves out to be married, but whatever. So at the reception, I walked up to the couple and said, "Congratulations, you're legal." And the young lady, well, she's not that young, frankly, the woman, looked at me and said, "And what difference does it make?" That's a good question. Back to the, I could give you all sorts of legal reasons, but you know, go into that. All right, what do you have to do? You have to maintain the required machinery, you have to nominate by methods required by law, and you make reports. Those are the three biggies. And when I was county Democratic chairman, this was the part that usually bugged me the most, because every time I had it all, had a computer program set up to do all the reporting, they would change what they wanted reported or how they wanted it reported, so I had to go back and rewrite the program. And there were no programs off the shelf that you could use for that. Write a put together an Excel program to do that. You have to have some required structure. And let me walk you through this real quickly. Please don't get lost. There are two required committees. If you're organized in a county, you must have a county executive committee, which consists of the county chair and the county precinct committee members. These are elected, technically. If, however, a party has a vacancy, then the executive committee, the county executive committee, can name a replacement. And in both parties right now, there's a big percentage of the members that end up being elected by their peers because somebody had to go out and recruit a precinct chair. Now, back in 1980, when I ran for county Democratic chairman, was recruited to run for county Democratic chairman, it was pretty hotly contested. At least it turned out to be. I was recruited, said, you know, we'd love to have you do this. Charlie Delgado, who was the county chair, wanted to step down. I don't know why anybody would keep that job more than about 4 to 6 years. I kept it 10. I think I was just, you know, addled. At any rate, you won't have any opposition. It's just pro forma. Then on filing deadline day, I discovered I had two opponents. Both were nice people, both of them I liked, both of them I knew quite well, and they just decided that they wasn't going to let a guy who had only been in the county for 11 years be county chair. You know, just, it ain't right. So I had to run an election. We're talking about elections later, a little bit later, okay? What's the key? What do you have to do when you run an election? Raise money, get to be known, and get people to the polls, which is an interesting process. Can I pick on you for a second? You know what the hardest thing there is to do in if you're a candidate?
Say hi, how are you?
Talk to people.
I'm sorry.
Talk to people.
Yeah, what I'm about to show you. You walk up, you say, "Hi, I'm Bujo Waddell. I'm running for county Democratic chairman. I would like to have your vote." I do that 50 to 100 times a day. Get the names. That is hard work. All the ads in the world will only get you so far. All the dollars will only get you so far. That's known as pressing the flesh, getting to know people. And it's both fun. Now, how many of you would you believe that I was an introvert in college? You'd have a hard time believing that, wouldn't you? I was kind of an introvert, geek. But There's nothing like getting involved in politics that'll bring you out. Also debate and speech, which I did in high school. All right, let's leave this for a second. There are a number of, quote, conventions that have to be held. On the night of the primary, which is the second Tuesday in March by law right now, you're supposed to have a precinct convention of people who have voted in the party or who affiliate with the party. Now, in point of fact, it's usually only the major parties that hold precinct conventions, although the minor parties can do it as well. The main job of the precinct convention is to elect delegates to go to the county convention, which will be the second Saturday after the primary. That's incorrect. The primary in March. Second Saturday after the primary. Yeah, that's right. Second Saturday after the primary in March. And they elect delegates to go to either the county or the district convention. Let me explain. Harris County has a number of senatorial districts. If you tried to hold a county convention in Harris County, you'd have to put it in Reliant Stadium because there wouldn't be a building big enough for that many delegates. So they, in any county that has more than one senatorial district, it's broken down by senatorial district rather than by for the county as a whole. Fair enough? So Dallas County, Harris County, Tarrant County, Bayer County, Travis County, El Paso County. I know they have to hold district conventions. At the state convention, you elect the executive committee. The delegates caucus, that is to say, meet by senatorial district, and each senatorial district elects one chairperson and one chair committee person and one committee man and one committee woman. Under Texas law, the state executive committee of each political party must have at a minimum 62 members, half of which are male, half of which are female. Okay? And by law, the state chair and the vice chair have to be of opposite genders. Now, one of my students several years ago asked me the question, could a transgender person be elected to one of those two jobs? And I thought that was kind of a ridiculous question until I think about 2 years later, there was a transgender candidate running for state vice chair. Didn't win, but it was interesting. Now, under the law, each party can add other members to the executive committee. The Democrats have allowed the Mexican-American caucus and the Black caucus to elect members to their executive committee. As of at the present time, there are only 64 members on the Republican state caucus or state committee because they have not allowed any other groups to be on there. Though there's a bunch of discussion about doing it. That is everything that I'm going to hit you with on parties. Would you like to let's cover a little media? Yeah, we're going to do that today. That's not a separate lecture. I mean, it don't take that long. Texas is semi-unique. There are only three states in the union that have a Capital News Corps that's full-time staffers who work for the media that report news out of the state capitol. New York, California, and Texas are the only three states that have full-time Capitol News correspondents. In other states, when they go into session or something, they rush people in. And in many, many states, of course, the local news reporters, I'll give you an example on this. In Missouri, when the Missouri legislature is in session, each of the major newspapers and the television stations bring some people in to Springfield, Missouri, which is the state capital of Missouri. Interestingly enough, Springfield, Missouri, and Springfield, Illinois are both capitals of their respective states. I mean, how could you create something like that, right? So they'll have maybe 15, 20 people there reporting the news, but as soon as the session's over, it drops off to, and Springfield, Missouri is about the size of Galveston. So you can imagine how much coverage they get on a ongoing basis. Not much. Associated Press maintains a staff of a number of people. Most of the major dailies and those of the Houston Chronicle, the Dallas Morning News, San Antonio newspaper. And of course, the Austin newspaper has a, Austin American Statesman has a real home field advantage, don't they? They're regular reporters. And they have a regular political staff reporters on the Austin American Statesman. Por qué?
Because that's their home.
That's their home. But why would you have a staff of 4 to 5 people who do nothing but report on state government news?
That's the capital, right?
It's the capital.
Yeah.
You're right.
Is that not it? I don't know.
But keep coming. What percentage of the people in the workforce in Austin work for the state of Texas?
Probably a lot.
How many of them are interested in what's going on politically? And if you're selling newspapers, if a big chunk of the people who are going to buy your subscriptions are really interested in what's going on in state government, then you're going to report on it. So if you have to have one subscription to one newspaper, either online or otherwise, for information about what's going on in Texas politics, the Austin American Statesman is probably your best bet. They will do more in-depth coverage than any of the newspapers other than the Houston Chronicle and the Dallas Morning News. Okay, those two. Television bureaus. Now, there is not a single television station in Texas that maintains a full-time staff in Austin, other than KLBJ, which is, of course, there automatically. And they don't have to have a separate staff there because they just take their people and use them when they need it. So what you'll see is both television and radio have bureaus. It's cheaper for the television stations in Houston, Dallas, Fort Worth, Beaumont, El Paso to simply subscribe to a bureau service that reports the news. Now, one time I had a little clip of one of the reporters for one of the bureaus reporting exactly the same story, but the only thing that was different was the microphone that they used, which had the logo of the television station that they were doing the feed to. Hi, this is, I'll call him Jim Jones. This is Jim Jones reporting for KHOU Television, Channel 11. Hi, this is Jim Jones reporting for Channel 13. Hi, this is Jim Jones reporting for Channel 5. The only thing he had to do was change the intro. And they had that canned. Also, now, what's happened to radio? Where have all the radio stations gone? We'll talk about that. What are the major dailies? The Chronicle, the Dallas Morning News, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, the Austin American Statesman, the San Antonio Express News. Now, I'm going to tell you, the San Antonio paper and the El Paso newspaper are second tier. When I lived in San Antonio back in the 1960s, the San Antonio News, at that time, there were separate newspapers. Now it's combined. We had a saying, if it bleeds, it leads.
Wow.
And they also were paired with the local television station. And I still remember many, many years, almost 50 years later, one particularly gruesome television sequence. This lady and her husband had gotten into a fight. And he put a meat cleaver, hatchet, something in her skull. And so they have her being rolled out on a gurney with the attendant holding the end of the axe that's still embedded in her skull. I thought, oh my God, how gruesome can you get? But it led that night. There's about 80 other dailies in Texas. And if you pick up the Galveston Daily News, the Bryan Eagle, the Beaumont Enterprise, and look for a particular story, you're going to find one thing very interesting about it. What do you think it is? It's exactly the same story in every one of those papers, written exactly the same way by the same reporter. Por qué? Can the Galveston Daily News afford to have a reporter full-time in Austin? No. Can the Beaumont paper afford to have a reporter full-time in Austin? No. So they subscribe to the Associated Press News Service, and they get that as a feed, and that's what they put in the paper. The only real decision they've got is, are we going to run this story or are we going to run that story? Now, what is frustrating beyond belief, I had some really good friends who were AP reporters. They're all retired now. And they would report anywhere from 60 to 80 stories a day. And how many of you think they actually made the papers? For any given paper, maybe 4 or 5 stories. It wouldn't be the same story in all the newspapers, but if it was a really high profile story, it would be in all of the newspapers. But they said, imagine, Harvey Rice put it to me this way, imagine you're a baker and you bake 50 beautiful cakes a day and they only sell 5 of them and the rest of them go into the trash. He said, I live off the 5 cakes, but it's frustrating to spend all this time, energy, and effort writing all of these really great stories and nobody ever gets to read them. Now, we don't really have an accurate count of how many weeklies there are in Texas. They come and go. If you're really interested in a list of, kind of updated list, look at texaspress.com and it has one sub thing called the online newspapers, and you can see what's being reported in each. Well, you can get the URL to the newspaper, and increasingly newspapers are putting everything online, but there's a hitch. What is it? How many of you have gone online for the Galveston Daily News? Anybody? Anything that's in the Galveston Daily News is reported, other than the classified ads, is put on their website. You got to subscribe to the paper or be a digital subscriber in order to get access to anything other than the headlines. Kind of like Bummer Dude. Now, there's 3 magazines that have political content: Texas Monthly, Texas Observer, and the Texas Tribune. The Texas Tribune, interestingly enough, is published online only. And at this point in time, they do not require a subscription. I thought very seriously about going ahead and bringing up the Texas Tribune. Can I give you kind of a minor assignment to do at home? Go ahead and do Texas Tribune. Just Google Texas Tribune and look at it. They report news on Texas government politics in more depth than any newspaper in Texas. Do an excellent job. Right now, advertisers carry the full cost. How soon they're, when they're going to have to go to having digital subscriptions, I'm not sure. Now, I mentioned radio. With the exception of public radio, there is almost no news on radio stations anymore. There's no money to it. So what happens are the radio stations are broken down into niches. Can I pick on you for a second? Do you have a niche radio station? The one that you listen to mostly? Now, I'm not going to ask you what it is. Okay. But there are several sociological studies that indicate you can tell a great deal about a person by simply knowing one thing. What is the radio station they listen to the most? And if you break it out for the three radio stations that they most listen to, you can draw a pretty good profile, not only about their race, ethnicity, religion, but political views. This is a rough figure, 75% of the radio stations on the air right now are primarily devoted to music. And their niche, rock, country, oldies, black music, Hispanic, or religious. Are any of you old enough to remember when Galveston had two radio stations? KGBC and KILE. KGBC broadcast from over on Pelican Island. KILE was the first to go, economically got it. And then eventually KGBC sold out to a religious station. It's Catholic radio. But it did the dead cockroach routine too. So they're gone. Fair enough? Television. All right, by the way, how many of you know that Texas has more television mass media markets than any other state in the union? How many of you knew that? Well, it shouldn't surprise you, the size of the state, the diversity of the state. Ms. King, I'm putting that out there for one reason only. Can you guess what it might be? You're a candidate running for statewide office in Texas.
You have more.
You have one heck of a job, and it's going to take one heck of a lot of money to cover the entire state. And then to make life complicated, can you buy one or two or three stations in the Houston market and have complete coverage? Not with the advent of cable, etc. So what's increasingly happening is the media market, the electronic media market, is becoming so diffuse and so fragmented. Well, I got good news and bad news. The good news, if you're a niche candidate and you want to appeal to a small niche of the electorate, if you have a good media consultant, he can pick which stations to buy time on at which time, and you will reach the particular group of people that you're seeking to reach. That's the good news. Now the bad news. If you're trying to reach everybody, it becomes horrendously expensive, one, and two, you're still only going to reach about 30 to 35% of the population. Now I'm going to ask this question. How many of your TV dropouts?
Could you define that?
You know what I mean by TV dropout?
No, sir.
You do not sit and watch all the time. All right, now, of those of you who admit to watching television three or more hours a week, how many of you have DVRs? How many of you? You know, the things that record the show for you? And you have the fast forward button?
Oh, yeah.
So as soon as the commercial comes on, what do you do? Mine goes 15 seconds. Every time I push the button, it jumps 15 seconds ahead. Because guess what the average length of the average television spot is? 15 seconds. In the old days, I'd have hit the pause button. When I had VCRs, I'd hit the pause button so I could go to the bathroom or go to the kitchen and get something to drink. Why do I want to put all this in here? Well, it's because when we start talking about campaigning and elections and whatnot, put this in your mix. How much harder is it to reach the general population now? If they don't listen to the news and they don't watch television and they don't belong to political parties, gosh, we talked about participation, didn't we? It's not that the American people are ignorant and uninformed. It's just that they don't know and they don't care. So what's the role of the mass media? Can they set the agenda? Maybe, by deciding what they're going to cover and how much they're going to cover it. Now, I'll be honest with you. I have quit watching the evening news, local evening news. I don't watch it anymore. Have any of you ever taken a stopwatch and timed, broken down the different kinds of coverage and then timed how much coverage was given, how much time each coverage got? I had students do that for an extra credit project one time. Discounting the commercials, what percentage of the time went to crime stories? What percentage went to accident stories or fires or oddball? You know, a cat with two heads or something like that. What percentage of it actually went to covering real political news, things that you needed to know in order to be able to make a reasonable decision as a voter? It's almost just a statistical blip. If they cover politics, it tends to be a scandal, it tends to be a controversy, it doesn't tend to be an in-depth, let's look at the problem. Is it reactive or proactive?
Reactive.
Kind of depends on the station, doesn't it? If we're looking at Fox News, is it reactive or proactive? I just want you to think about this as you're watching, if you do watch. Now, last point before I turn you loose almost to play in the traffic. Increasingly, the media markets, particularly newspapers, have become less and less profitable. And so the small independents or the stations that are owned by individuals or the newspapers that are owned by individuals are disappearing. And certain major corporations are buying up most of the, and these are the newspapers and television stations. The Hearst Corporation owns the Chronicle, the San Antonio Express News, the Beaumont Enterprise, the Midland Reporter Telegraph, the Plainview paper, and the Laredo paper. The Belo Corporation, if you live in the Dallas Metroplex, look at what your choices are. The Belo Corporation owns the Dallas Morning News, the Arlington newspaper, the Garland newspaper, the Grand Prairie newspaper, Irving newspaper, Richardson newspaper, and then they own the major television station and radio station, WFAA. They also own the major television station in Houston, KHOU. The Clear Channel Corporation, the Belo Corporation has a bunch of those too, and I don't want to go into the details on it, but that's their website, I'm sorry. The Clear Channel station focuses on radio stations and small television stations, and if you want a complete list, you can go to the Clear Channel Corporation. They also do billboards. They're in the billboards big time. A little more. The Lynn Broadcasting owns the Dallas-Fort, one of the second stations in Austin and Dallas. Cox Enterprises owns the Austin American Station. Do I want you to memorize this? No. What I want you to take out of it. Caroline, any idea? There's about five media conglomerates that own about 80% of the circulation of Texas newspapers. Those same five own about, depending on how you look at it, between 50 and 60% of the television capacity in the state of Texas. So if they all got together and decided we're going to cover X subjects or we're going to do only X, Y, or Z, that would be all the news you were going to get. Fortunately, they haven't gotten to that point yet. Now, within the news media itself, there's some real interesting things that have to take place. Packed journalism, where everybody follows the same subject, or the reliance on paid public relations people from the agencies and politicians to provide the information. Those are called flacks. Efforts to get media shielded from legal problems, a question of media bias, and the question of how open the records and meetings happen to be. Texas has a fairly strong open meetings, open records law compared to most states. I could tell you a lot of stories on that, but we don't have time for it. All right, we're wrapping it up. You've never heard of any of these, probably. Starting at the bottom, there's the Society of Professional Journalists, the Texas Press Association, the Texas Daily Newspaper Association. Notice the asterisk. They're all 501c3 organizations, meaning what?
Nonprofit.
Can they be political? No, not under their 501c3. Now, how many of you are going to go see the silent movie they're going to have down at the Grand Opera House toward the end of the month? Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde?
Huh?
What's it called?
That was a classic 1920s horror movie called Jekyll and Hyde. Dr. Jekyll.
Jekyll and Hyde, that's a song. It's a book, too. It's a song.
And they'll have people playing music to go along with it. All right.
It's a song, too.
These are the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde of media organizations. Texas media is the lobbying arm of the media associations. They are the sweetness and light people. They're always so nice to everybody. And the ones that will strip your clothes off, stomp on you, tear your arms off, and be nasty is the Freedom of Information Foundation. Now, I got an interesting piece of information for you. They have the same membership and basically the same board of directors. Why two organizations? Well, if you're a politician who's been jumped on and had your hiney torn up big time by the Freedom of Information Foundation for violation of the Freedom of Information Act, are you likely to be in a good mood when it comes time to pass legislation? No. So the sweetness and light guys come in. Oh, we're so nice to you. And I'm sorry, most politicians don't know they're dealing with the same folks. That's Jekyll and Hyde. Joined in the hip like Siamese twins. But one goes around with their knife trying to stab you, and the other has bouquets of roses. Mm-hmm. Well, that's overdoing it, but you got the point, right? Ba-dip-ba-dip-dip. Let's about lights all, folks. How many of you have been following the current race for the Republican nomination for president? I know some of you have. Is it focused on who's ahead, who's behind, who's up in the polls, who's down in the polls? It is still months before the first caucus, and we're laying bets on who's going to die first. And when the coverage, sound bites. Now, the long debates, and I'll put those in quotation marks, were an effort to try to get around the sound bites. But the only thing most people knew about the debates were the sound bites, where, you know, Trump snarls at somebody and the rest of them bite back him, and Carly Farino chews his rear and whatever. How many of you paid attention to the coverage after Hurricane Ike? Why is it necessary for the governor, the president, and everybody to take off their coats, board a helicopter, and come down and fly over Bolivar Peninsula to know that, my God, it's been wiped out? That's a pseudo-event. You get coverage by appearing to be concerned.
Yeah.
Right? I would much rather that you sit in your office, take field reports, and do something. Now, we're going to come up on a season of political ads soon. And I would like for you, you're not going to be in my course, so you can't, I can't do any way to make it make credit. But look at what percentage of the ads are feel-good fluff ads and which ones are attack ads. And I wish I had it. The absolute best fluff ad I have ever seen, and it was just masterful, was Bob Krueger, who was running for re-election with the United States Senate, on the banks of the Guadalupe River with his wife, two kids, and the dog. Beautiful scenery. And he, you know, I'm Bob Krueger, I'm running for the Senate, and blah, 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 beautiful wife, beautiful kids. And the little three-year-old finally at the very end looks up and says, Daddy! I mean, that was the ultimate fluff ad. On the other hand, there's the devil and there's my opponent and they're twins. And which do you run? Depends.